Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective,
and more affordable than you might think.
Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info. Take your business to the next level.
On a cultural crusade all across America, this is the Michael Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth, where on this special broadcast, we focus on one of the greatest struggles of our time, a struggle that is still very much with us, taking center stage so frequently among world conflicts, the struggle between Israel and her Arab neighbors. In this special broadcast, Why They Fight, the story of the Arab-Israeli struggle. We had brought the story all the way up through the late 1930s, when the British suggested that the territory they controlled in Palestine be divided into a Palestinian state and into a Jewish state. A suggestion that was tragically rejected and violently rejected by the Arabs who lived in Palestine at the time. But now there is a different twist to the story, because World War II intervenes, with it the Holocaust, which seems to change everything, but also carries with it all kinds of misunderstandings and lies about the situation, which we will clear up in this special broadcast. When I talk to you about lies and misinformation, so many people have the idea that the Holocaust produced the state of Israel. Well, it's simply not true. If you've been following this story so far, you know that before World War II even began, there were nearly 500,000, some people say more than 500,000 Jews living in settlements and cities and in farms and land that had been purchased and developed in Israel starting way back in the 1800s. And there was a very substantial community of Jews already located in Israel. And in fact, before the Holocaust happened, before the conscience of the world was aroused by the suffering that the Jewish people had experienced, the idea of a Jewish homeland had already been endorsed by the British government with the Balfour Declaration. The League of Nations had voted to further endorse that idea. And the English had proposed in 1937 to go ahead and create that Jewish state. So to say that all of a sudden the Holocaust changed everything was simply not true. The one thing about the Holocaust, about the German persecution of Jews in Germany and then throughout Europe, not only persecution but murder of Jews, is that it seemed to be a confirmation of the Zionist vision. You'll remember that before he died in 1904, way back in 1904, Theodor Herzl had been absolutely prophetic. His line was basically there were only three choices for Jews. Either assimilation, basically becoming Christian and blending in with the rest of Europe and the rest of the West, or going to Israel and being part of a new Jewish state to be upbuilt, or to suffer from worse and worse and more intense persecution. What was horrific about the Holocaust was that it actually confirmed so much of Zionist thought, that if you're going to stay in Europe, you're going to be victims to this disease of Jew hatred, of anti-Semitism, which did explode all across Europe, of course, during the war. What also intensified the situation was that in the years immediately leading up to the war, and then during the war itself, England would not allow Jewish refugees to settle in any numbers in Palestine, in the land of Israel. There was virtually unlimited Arab immigration from countries like Syria and Egypt into Palestine, which is why the population grew so quickly. Far from being displaced, the population of Arabs was growing very quickly there, but the rate of growth of the Jewish population was distinctly limited. The Holocaust occurred. Millions of Jews were killed. Millions of others were displaced. Some made it to the United States. Hundreds of thousands of others wanted to come to Palestine. And yet, even after the war, the British were so concerned of provoking more Arab rioting and more Arab upset. And of course, there were far, far more Arabs who were living under British domination, in not only in Palestine, but in Transjordan and in Egypt and in Iraq, where the British had a role. They were so concerned about that, that there were very tight limits on even people coming who had no place else to go. And dramatic stories like the story of the ship Exodus, which arrives with all of these displaced people and has to be turned away by the English. What you have after World War II is one of the most complicated struggles imaginable going on in Palestine. It's not just the Jews versus the Arabs. It's also the Jews versus the English, because the English were limiting immigration, and because the Zionists there in Palestine wanted the English to go away so an independent Jewish state could be established. And it's also Jews versus Jews, because there were great divisions between the more militant groups within the Zionist movement and the mainstream that was already being led by David Ben-Gurion, and that went to the extreme eventually of even shelling a ship called the Altalena, killing 13 of their fellow Jews because the ship was delivering armaments to an illegitimate extremist group. At least that was in the eyes of the sort of the Jewish mainstream. And a word quickly about that Jewish mainstream. One of the other mistakes that people make about the modern state of Israel, they not only believe the mistaken idea that, oh, it all grew out of the Holocaust, when most of Zionist history preceded the Holocaust, but people also make the mistake of thinking that this was a group of religious fanatics. Most of the people who built the Zionist movement, who risked their lives for the Zionist movement, were not religious. They did not wear skull caps. They did not observe the Sabbath. They did not keep kosher. They were secularists. They had a romantic identification with the figures in the Bible. And they very much believed in bringing the language of Hebrew to life. And they definitely wanted to connect with a glorious Jewish past. But the percentage of early settlers to Israel who were Orthodox, who were very traditional in their religious observance, that percentage was small. It was a definite minority. The people who represented the mainstream, the labor Zionists, who really led the entire endeavor, were socialists. They were secular socialists who also believed a little bit in the necessity of letting people do business. But mostly they believed in the idea of establishing a Jewish homeland wherever they could get it and getting rid of the English. All of this ended up falling into the lap of the new United Nations. And you have to think back and realize that this was a very different United Nations from what that organization is today. Today, the United Nations is a joke. But right after World War II, after the Nazis and the Japanese were defeated, there was a period in which people took the UN very, very seriously. That was going to be the new Parliament of Man. That had been Franklin Roosevelt's vision. So it only made sense that when the British wanted to deal with the situation of what to do, they threw it to the UN. And the UN sent a commission to Palestine. And it was a commission involving 11 different nations who were going to look at the situation in Palestine and make a recommendation. And the commission came back with a divided recommendation. 7 nations, Canada, Czechoslovakia, Guatemala, the Netherlands, Peru, Sweden, and Uruguay, recommended for partition. The 2 independent nations be established. 1 Palestinian Arab, 1 Jewish. And that Jerusalem would be an internationalized city that would be run separately. There were 3 other nations, India, Iran, and Yugoslavia, that recommended a unitary state that would have just 1 Arab province and 1 Jewish province, actually different provinces within the state. And Australia, showing great courage, abstained. Australia couldn't make up its mind. So the commission voted 7-3 in favor of partition. And eventually, with U.S. support, The United Nations itself voted for partition. And here there are lots of legends about that U.S. support for partition, which was crucial. The idea that partition would create a Jewish state. More coming up on this special show, Why They Fight.
Introducing the all-new My Slippers from MyPillow. 2 years in development. Designed to wear indoor, outdoor, all day long. Made with MyPillow foam and impact gel to help prevent fatigue. And made with quality leather suede. For a limited time, you can get 50% off the new My Slippers. They're super comfortable, and you'll like them so much you'll want to get pairs of them for the entire family. Go to MyPillow.com and click on the radio listener's square and use promo code MEDVED. That's promo code MEDVED, M-E-D-V-E-D. You'll also get deep discounts on all MyPillow products, like the Giza Dream bed sheets, the mattress topper, and towel sets. Call right now 1-800-320-6280. That's 1-800-320-6280, and use promo code MEDVED. Or go to the web at MyPillow.com. The all-new My Slippers from MyPillow.
Small investors shamed Wall Street by running the price of certain stocks way up to the detriment of big hedge funds, social media, and trading platforms, then kept investors from buying stock. A financial war is being waged in America. With all this volatility, now's an even better time to protect your net worth and own precious metals as part of your portfolio. Nick Rovich, who's the owner of AmFed Coin and Bullion, has always been fair and honest with my precious metals holdings, and now, more than ever, it's a good time to own tangible assets like gold, silver, and platinum. AmFed can show you smart choices, which have been proven winners time and time again. Call Nick and his team at AmFed today, 800-221-7694. That's 800-221-7694, or visit AmericanFederal.com.
Get healthy, not high, with 100% pure CBD powerful natural pain relief from Veterans Vitality. GCN listeners, have you ever thought about how CBD may help you? I'm sure you have heard about the many benefits of CBD. Well, here's your opportunity to try before you buy. Created by veterans and for everyone who deserves better choices, our CBD is derived from organic hemp, grown in the USA, and third-party tested. Veterans Vitality CBD saves you as much as 25 to 50% over our competition, and a portion of all sales is contributed to veteran nonprofits and events. Many of our customers have experienced improved quality of life, help with anxiety, PTSD, and overall well-being. Our products do not contain THC. They are safe, non-addictive, effective, and 100% legal. GCN listeners, get your free trial bottle of premium CBD by simply paying shipping and handling at GCNFreeCBD.com. That's GCNFreeCBD.com. Again, GCNFreeCBD.com. Offered by Veterans Vitality Premium CBD.
Have you heard the warning from the dead doctors don't lie guy? I'm talking about Dr. Joel Wallach. He says if you have a 4-inch medical chart, if you take prescription drugs for high cholesterol or high blood pressure, arthritis, joint pains, or other health issues, the medical profession is failing you. They're using you for an ATM machine. That's what he says. He has a free lecture revealing what pharmaceutical companies don't want you to know. There's been groundbreaking research and discoveries on how to effectively treat or eliminate over 900 different diseases naturally. And it's all in his free lecture called Deadly Recipe. You want it free? Call him toll-free at 855-79-YOUNG. You ready? 855-79-YOUNG. Dr. Joel Wallach, the dead doctors don't lie guy, says there's no reason why we shouldn't live to be at least 100 and have a great time getting there.
On this special edition of the Michael Medved Show, we're looking at the roots of the Arab-Israeli struggle, a special broadcast, Why They Fight. What about this idea that America has sponsored Israel from the beginning? It's not really true. Because in Israel's war for independence, which followed the departure of the British who had control of that whole area, America actually had an arms embargo. We didn't send weapons or aid to Israel. In fact, most of the weapons that Israel got, it was able to smuggle in past the embargo, and they were weapons from Czechoslovakia. There were very few weapons that Israel was able to get at the same time that the Arab nations, had much greater access to weaponry. In any event, there's a story about why Harry Truman decided to support partition of Israel. There was a whole debate going on in the United Nations. The Arab nations were very, very much opposed to partition, to dividing the land between a Palestinian state and a Jewish Israeli state. The Arabs, no Arab wanted that. The Palestinians, the local Palestinians, didn't want that. They believed that it was an insult to have any kind of Jewish state in the Middle East. Even though, in terms of population, the area that had been allotted by the partition plan by the United Nations had an almost 2-to-1 Jewish majority. Yeah, that's right. A 2-to-1 Jewish majority over the Arabs who were living in that area that the UN had assigned. But this was still very, very much opposed by the Arabs. In any event, there's a story that's told in a book called Plain Speaking by Merle Miller, who interviewed Harry Truman after he left the presidency, where Harry Truman claims, at least according to this book, which has been questioned by a lot of historians, that what happened is his old business partner from Independence, Missouri, Eddie Jacobson, came to the White House to persuade Harry Truman to recognize Israel and to support partition. And yes, Eddie Jacobson was Jewish, and he had been an old friend of Harry Truman's, had helped him through tough times. They had had this haberdashery store together in Independence, Missouri that failed, and he was one of Truman's best friends, a wartime buddy from World War I. And apparently, Eddie Jacobson came in to see the president, and Truman said he just started crying, and Truman couldn't stand it. And eventually, at least according to the story, he was influenced enough to support partition. The truth of the matter is, most nations in the world, including the Soviet Union, supported partition because it seemed like the best way to avoid conflict. So it was voted by the United Nations with the support of both America and the Soviet Union, and it was agreed that the land would be divided into a Palestinian state, which is exactly what we're talking about today, and a Jewish state. And Jerusalem would be an international city. Now, the reason that the Jewish people accepted the idea of the international status of Jerusalem, even though they had an almost 3-to-1 majority of Jewish population in Jerusalem at that time, was because, and most people are unaware of this, according to the UN partition plan, 10 years later, in 1957, the residents of Jerusalem could vote on what they wanted to do with the city. And since there was such a heavy Jewish majority, there was the assumption that they would vote to join the new state of Israel. So everything, from a Jewish perspective at least, would be okay. But what wasn't okay was when the Declaration of Independence, of Proclamation of Independence of the new state of Israel took place, just moments after the British mandate ended, the British ran down the flag and went home. And the Jewish organizations that had basically been running the Jewish settlements together in Israel then came forward and proclaimed their independence. And there were literally hundreds of thousands of people out on the street, dancing in the street. They listened to the proceedings on radio at the time, May 14th, 1948. And one of the items in the Proclamation of Independence that was read by the new prime minister of the new state of Israel, David Ben-Gurion, he said, "In the midst of wanton aggression, we yet call upon the Arab inhabitants of the state of Israel to preserve the ways of peace and play their part in the development of the state on the basis of full and equal citizenship and due representation in all its bodies and institutions. We extend our hand in peace and neighborliness to all the neighboring states and their peoples and invite them to cooperate with the independent Jewish nation for the common good of all." Nice try. Within hours of the proclamation of independence for the new state of Israel, five different Arab neighbors simultaneously sent invading armies with tremendous confidence. Because remember, Israel had not been a state. There was no organized air force yet. There was a tough time getting armaments. So it seemed that having Transjordan, Egypt, Syria, Lebanon, and Iraq simultaneously marching in, it would be a piece of cake. And the bloodshed indeed was horrendous. By the time the war for independence was over, the destruction and the killing on the Jewish side were quite extraordinary. Over 1% of the population, the Jewish population then of the young state of Israel, was killed. 6,700 casualties. Be the equivalent of about 3 million American casualties today. If you can imagine how our country would react. And yet, the war ended up being very successful for the Jewish side. Yes, they lost half of Jerusalem. Not quite half, but they lost the eastern part of Jerusalem and the old city with its religious sites. It was occupied by the Jordanians. And the Jordanians then proceeded to destroy 58 different synagogues, including the Great Synagogue of Jerusalem. They also tore up the historic cemetery on the Mount of Olives and actually took some of the gravestones from that cemetery on the Mount of Olives and used them to construct a military latrine. You could still, in the latrine they built, see the ancient thousand-year-old inscriptions on the gravestones that Jordanians did. They also banned all Jewish worshippers from going to the holy places, including the Western Wall, the Wailing Wall, when it was under Jordanian control. But the bottom line was, after the war for independence, the Jewish state, Israel, had greatly increased the amount of land that it was able to arrogate to itself. It had gone beyond the partition in most areas. And what was interesting is the ceasefire lines actually ended up giving Israel more land than before and a much smaller Arab population. Why? Because of the refugees, which has become such a huge focus of debate in all the subsequent Arab-Israeli conflicts. Please understand, before 1948, there were no Arab refugees. Before 1948, before the independence of the State of Israel, there were only increasing Arab populations in Israel. So why did they flee? Why did they run away? Were they expelled? It wasn't quite like that. But it was tragic, and the world is still paying the price. We will get to the truth about the Arab refugees, some 500 to 700,000 of them, who ran away in the midst of the Arab-Israeli war, Israel's war for independence, as we continue this special broadcast, Why They Fight.
You trust your mother, right? She's always taken care of you and always tried to give you good advice when you ask for it. And sometimes even when you don't. Well, even though she might not mention it, Mom very likely has neck, back, and shoulder pains. And she needs relief. So trust this good advice. Give back to Mom this Mother's Day with quality products from Sunny Bay, like our disposable heat patches. They're back in stock now and target neck and shoulder pain in adults of all ages. Or our extra long neck heating pads. They provide soothing relief to painful sore necks and backs. Mom can heat them in her microwave, and they come in a variety of colors and patterns. Read our trusted, authentic, and real reviews on Amazon when you search Sunny Bay Heating Wraps. And shop now in time for Mother's Day. There's no shipping delays from Sunny Bay. Find us on Amazon, Walmart, Etsy, and sunny-bay.com. Remember, just search for Sunny Bay Neck Wraps. Order now because stock is high and shipping is fast. From Sunny Bay.
USA Radio News with Tim Berg.
Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen is warning of enormous economic impact on Americans thanks to the war in Ukraine. Yellen saying Americans will deal with disruptions on the flow of energy and food as a result of Russia's unprovoked invasion. The Treasury Secretary adding Russia and Ukraine account for around one-third of the world's wheat exports. The lights are slowly coming back on for thousands of people in the South. Texas has the most power outages at over 9,500 after storms tore through, killing one person. A second death was reported in Georgia, where two tornadoes touched down. Alabama, Mississippi, and South Carolina also saw several twisters. The state's continuing to clean up damage as more severe weather is expected to continue through tonight. You're listening to USA Radio News.
Looking for that edge during those intimate moments? We see many ads for enhancement, but the side effects include death. At GCN Team, we should change the Healthy Body, Brain, and Heart Pack to the Healthy Libido Pack. The brain and heart are not the only organs that require a healthy vascular system. For proper blood flow at the right moment, go to GCNteam.com or call 877-878-4203. That's 877-878-4203. That's 877-878-4203. You've seen crazy diets to lose weight? At GCN Team, our healthy body weight loss system simply neutralizes the body, bringing down cravings. It has been proven that nutritional deficiencies drive appetite for carbs, sugars, and fats. Lose weight the easy way. Find us at GCNteam.com or call 877-878-4203. Fighting cravings is a fool's game. Give the body what it needs to be satisfied. Again, 877-878-4203. That's 877-878-4203.
Complement your health with hemp-derived cannabinoid oil. We've always believed that the closer to Earth, the better it is for our bodies. Our hemp-derived cannabinoid oil is phytocannabinoid-rich, full-spectrum, and organically grown. Finally, hemp made easy, clean, and effective. GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203. That's right, we cut through the red tape. It's now available at GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203.
Frustrated trying to get business capital? Want to take the slow process and rejection out of the equation? GCNLoans.com removes the slow, irritating approval process. Instead, get quick, simple funding. Powered by David Allen Capital, 80% of our pre-qualified clients are approved in days. Pre-qualify at GCNLoans.com and get your money this week. It's that easy. GCNLoans.com. That's GCNLoans.com.
Become a medhead at michaelmedved.com. When you become a medhead at michaelmedved.com, you get access to years and years of our previous shows, hundreds of Michael's commentaries, movie reviews, exclusive podcasts, and more. And it's also just a great way to support the show. Go to michaelmedved.com, click on the medhead banner, and subscribe today. Use the promo code SPRING40 for a special discount.
Special broadcast of the Michael Medved Show, Why They Fight, the story of the Arab-Israeli conflict. We're talking about the war for Israeli independence in 1948 and 49, right after the Declaration of Independence of Israel, right after the British leave, five different Arab armies simultaneously invade. And one of the results of that invasion is the departure of literally hundreds of thousands of Palestinian Arabs. Why? Were they chased out by the Israelis? Quite the contrary. All of the public pronouncements of the new Israeli state were begging the Arab citizens to stay put. But you have to understand, that's not human nature, because this was very much like a civil war, where you have villages, settlements right next to each other, and people are worried and people are scared, especially with big armies marching this way. Just to give you some perspective, in his memoirs, the Syrian prime minister at the time, whose name is Khaled el-Azam, the Syrian prime minister, one of the people who led the invasions of Israel, said, quote, "Since 1948, we have been demanding the return of the refugees to their homes, but we ourselves are the ones who encouraged them to leave. Only a few months separated our call to them to leave and our appeal to the United Nations to resolve on their return." There are lots of statements like that by Arab leaders. For instance, a PLO spokesman named Mahmoud Abbas said in 1976, "The Arab armies entered Palestine to protect the Palestinians from the Zionist tyranny, but instead they abandoned them, forced them to emigrate and to leave their homeland, and threw them into prisons similar to the ghettos in which the Jews used to live." Because after the Arab residents of Palestine, in their hundreds of thousands, ran away to neighboring Arab countries, left the path of battle. They weren't allowed to settle in those countries. They were set up in refugee camps, because only in Jordan, of all the Arab countries, were the Palestinians even granted citizenship. According to a Lebanese newspaper in New York City, Habib Issa, a Lebanese, again, wrote at the time that the Secretary General of the Arab League, Azam Pasha, assured the Arab peoples that the occupation of Palestine and Tel Aviv would be as simple as a military promenade. He pointed out that they were already on the frontiers and that all the millions the Jews had spent on land and economic development would be easy booty, for it would be a simple matter to throw Jews into the Mediterranean. Brotherly advice was given to the Arabs of Palestine to leave their land, homes, and property, and to stay temporarily in neighboring fraternal states, lest the guns of the invading Arab armies mow them down. So one of the questions here is, okay, if the Arabs ran away in the face of the advancing armies, why didn't the Jews? The answer was, Jewish people had no place to go. They certainly wouldn't be welcome in any of the neighboring Arab states. And if you look at the map of Israel, it is surrounded by very hostile Arab states. Jewish people who were in the land of Israel fought like cornered rats because they were. They had just survived the Holocaust, the death of millions, and now they were dealing with a desperate situation. For the Arab refugees, it was different. Again, one more Palestinian view of what actually happened. Musa Alami, a leading Palestinian nationalist at the time, explained the attitude of the Arabs who left. He wrote, quote, "The Arabs of Palestine left their homes, were scattered, and lost everything. But there remained one solid hope. The Arab armies were on the eve of their entry into Palestine to save the country and return things to their normal course, punish the aggressor, and throw oppressive Zionism with its dreams and dangers into the sea. On May 14, 1948, crowds of Arabs stood by the roads leading the frontiers of Palestine, enthusiastically welcoming the advancing armies. Days and weeks passed, sufficient to accomplish the sacred mission, but the Arab armies did not save the country. Then hope fled." That is why to this day, the Palestinians refer to the entire war for independence as al-Nakba, the catastrophe. Because there was an assumption that if they left their homes, they would soon be able to return. But as it turned out, Israel won the war. And then the question becomes, okay, do you let the refugees back into their homes? Surprisingly, perhaps, there was at least an express willingness on the part of the Israeli leadership to allow the return of at least some of the Arab refugees, but it would have to be negotiated. And at that time, in 1949, with the armistice, not a single Arab nation, not Egypt, not Transjordan, not Iraq, not Lebanon, not Syria, was willing to negotiate with the new state of Israel or to recognize it in any way. And so the situation of the refugees remained painful and got only worse with subsequent wars. I'll tell you why when we return on this special broadcast, Why They Fight. This is Michael Medved at michaelmedved.com for Town Hall. During the period of home isolation, I've looked more deeply into messages in the traditional prayers I recite every morning. For instance, a key passage in ancient Jewish liturgy is the Yishtabach, or the God Be Praised prayer. It concludes by hailing, quote, "the God of thanksgivings, Master of Wonders, who chooses melodious songs." Now, this should remind us that music, with its mysterious power to stir souls, is a divine gift, but also that not all music is created equal. We praise God not for creating music, humans do that, but for choosing the right songs. So what music would God choose? I'd assume heaven would select enduring achievements of the last 300 years, possessing depth and spirituality, rather than superficial yelps that may prove popular but fleeting. God's playlist more likely features Bach and Mozart over hip-hop or techno-pop. That meaningful choice could help all of us endure this devastating interruption in our lives. I'm Michael Medved. We'll be right back. tremendous cost, the new state of Israel wins its first war in 1949. That's what we're talking about on the special broadcast of the Michael Medved Show, why they fight, the story of the Arab-Israeli conflict. Israel loses 1% of its total population in that war, but the Arab losses are even greater, not as a percentage because there's so many more millions and millions of Arab people surrounding Israel, but are even greater in terms of the dislocation of some 500,000 to 800,000 Palestinian refugees, depending on whose numbers you want to count. And the difficulty, of course, about taking any of those people back is that there was no willingness to negotiate. And the question that Israel had was, how do you possibly take people back when they are pledged to your destruction? And the absolute determination on the part of Arabs to see to Israel's destruction was very, very clear. The statements that came out of the Arab world about the illegitimacy of Israel and the inability to accept Israel, once you're not even willing to negotiate with a new state, it was very, very difficult to expect that new state to take back hundreds of thousands of people who had left with hostility and fear. And what is it reminiscent of? There's a very good point that's made by Dr. Mitchell Bard, the author of Myths and Facts. It's a very interesting and important book about the Middle Eastern crisis and its background. And he makes the parallel between the situation in Israel and the situation in something else we've covered on some of our history broadcasts, the American Revolution.
You're listening to a best of the Michael Medved Show. For complete show archives, go to michaelmedved.com and consider becoming a Medhead. Use the promo code SPRING40 for some special discounts. When you become a premium subscriber, you get access to hundreds of Michael's commentaries, movie reviews, exclusive podcasts, and of course our commercial-free radio show going back years and years. It's all at michaelmedved.com. Click on the Medhead banner today.
I've had several knee injuries on my left knee, and so over time, stiffness set in with a great deal of pain. So I went ahead and ordered the starter packet, and after about 2 weeks, I started noticing results. And after they were gone and I reordered, let's say 6 weeks in, my pain was virtually gone. But the big bonus was that the stiffness was also virtually gone. And so, therefore, my problem with my left hip also went away. I'm very happy I decided to try it and will continue to use it.
You can get a 3-week quick start for just $19.95. That's 95 cents a day. What a good investment. Nothing to lose but your pain and the whole world to gain. You can go to michaelmedved.com, click on the banner for Relief Factor. That's michaelmedved.com, banner for Relief Factor, or call 833 toll free 654 pain, 833 654 pain. The Institute for Faith and Freedom at Grove City College promotes the principles of faith and freedom and equips the next generation of American leaders. Through bold opinion pieces, academic conferences on important topics, and examination of key figures and events in American history, the Institute and Grove City College stand apart from the indoctrination that's dominated much of higher education. The Institute for Faith and Freedom offers a brand new online course with scholar and historian Dr. J. Cost on the mind of Madison in the midst of dysfunctional politics. The life and insights of James Madison can remind us of long-lost truths. What's politics supposed to accomplish? How should the people influence their political leaders? Go to faithandfreedom.com to learn more about their work and to take this new online course on the mind of Madison. Again, faithandfreedom.com.
Tejibo Tea Club's original Pure Pau de Arco Super Tea helps build red corpuscles in the blood, which carry oxygen to our organs and cells. Our organs and cells need oxygen to regenerate themselves. The immune system needs oxygen to develop, and cancer dies in oxygen. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A one-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit shopsupertea.com. The first word is shop, spelled S-H-O-P, then the word super, and then the word tea. The complete website is shopsupertea.com or call us at 818-984-6100 Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-984-6100. Shopsupertea.com.
If you're like most Americans, you're pretty much in disbelief with what's going on in the world. As we all know, global problems are having local consequences. Too many of them. And if the peanut butter really hits the fan, are you ready? Grocery store supply chains are only as strong as their weakest link. Don't wait for them to break. Now's the time to secure emergency food for everyone in your family. My Patriot Supply is America's largest preparedness company. Our specially packaged and delicious food stays fresh for up to 25 years in storage. It'll be there when you need it. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and pick up several emergency food kits. There are a dozen different sizes that average over 2,000 calories per day. Our food kits will ship quickly and discreetly to your door. Having food storage in your home beats government food lines hands down. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com today and prepare for what's coming. MyPatriotSupply.com.
You're listening to a Best of the Michael Medved Show.
There's a very good point that's made by Dr. Mitchell Bard, the author of Myths and Facts. It's a very interesting and important book about the Middle Eastern crisis and its background. And he makes the parallel between the situation in Israel and the situation in something else we've covered on some of our history broadcasts, the American Revolution. And I've already explained to you that during the American Revolution, there were 100,000 refugees, Tories, supporters of the British Crown, loyalists who ran away, lost their property, lost everything, left the new nation of America and fled to Canada, basically greatly enlarging the population of Canada. And during the negotiations for a peace treaty with England, some of the demands that England made were that the loyalists get a chance to return to America and get their property back. Benjamin Franklin wrote a letter dated November 26, 1782, to Richard Oswald, a British negotiator, and said, "Your ministers require that we should receive again into our bosom those who have been our bitterest enemies and restore their properties who have destroyed ours. And this, while the wounds they have given us are still bleeding." And, of course, America never did take the Tories back, even though they did have a peace agreement with the British. There was no peace agreement between the Israelis and their Arab neighbors. In fact, far from it, particularly after the rise of one particularly obnoxious character named Gamal Abdel Nasser, a young, charismatic Egyptian colonel who helped to end the Egyptian monarchy and based a great deal of his appeal on hatred of Israel. For instance, he dispatched across the border to Israel almost daily attacks by terrorists called Fedayeen, beginning in the early 1950s. And here's what he said on August 31st, 1955. "Egypt has decided to dispatch her heroes, the disciples of Pharaoh and the sons of Islam, and they will cleanse the land of Palestine. There will be no peace on Israel's border because we demand vengeance, and vengeance is Israel's death." Under these circumstances, you want to take back hundreds of thousands of refugees? In 1956, President Nasser of Egypt says, "I am not solely fighting against Israel itself. My task is to deliver the Arab world from destruction through Israel's intrigue, which has its roots abroad. Our hatred is very strong. There is no sense in talking about peace with Israel. There's not even the smallest place for negotiations." And these statements continue and actually get even more intense with Nasser saying, the president of Egypt, in 1967, before the 67 war, "As of today, there no longer exists an international emergency force to protect Israel." There had been UN inspectors who he had asked to leave, and they had left. Nasser says, we shall exercise patience no more. We shall not complain anymore to the UN about Israel. The sole method we shall apply against Israel is total war, which will result in the extermination of Zionist existence. And then, perhaps most revealingly, on May 30th, just before that 1967 war, President Nasser says, the armies of Egypt, Jordan, Syria, and Lebanon are poised on the borders of Israel to face the challenge. While standing behind us are the armies of Iraq, Algeria, Kuwait, Sudan, and the whole Arab nation. This act will astound the world. Today they will know that the Arabs are arranged for battle. The critical hour has arrived. We have reached the stage of serious action and not declarations. He didn't quite realize how serious the action was, because with statements like that, and with Nasser closing the Straits of Tehran, which was an act of war blocking Israeli shipping into the Suez Canal, Israel struck first in 1967. And the resulting war was a complete disaster for the Arabs, producing even more refugees. Because this time, Israel advanced on three fronts. Against Jordan, seizing the rest of Jerusalem that had been taken by the Jordanians during the War for Independence, taking all of the West Bank, taking all of the Sinai Peninsula from Egypt, and taking the Golan Heights from Syria. All of this in a war that Nasser had set up and had planned. And it was an even greater disaster for the Arabs than their previous aggression in 1948 and 49. There were about some 60,000 of the refugees from this war who were allowed to come back into the West Bank. But all of a sudden, Israel faced this situation of even more refugees, and many of those refugees now living under Israeli control. The important thing to keep in mind is that the Arab hatred of Israel didn't come from refugees. The refugees came from the Arab hatred. Take a look at the history. In 1921 and 1929 and 1937, before there even was a state of Israel, when all that the Israelis, the Jews, had done was to buy land, already you had riots and attacks on Jewish settlements. You had acts of terrorism. Before there were any refugees, you had the attack by all the Arab nations on the state of Israel. And long before the Israelis controlled the West Bank and the Gaza Strip, you had this massive attack in three directions from Syria, Jordan, and Egypt that created the 1967 war. So what about the role of the United States? We will cover that as we finish up this special broadcast, Why They Fight, the story of the Arab-Israeli conflict.
This is Michael Medved at MichaelMedved.com for Town Hall. As the nation struggles with our legacy of racism and inequality, many well-intentioned Americans embrace lies about white privilege, the idea that people of European ancestry enjoy vast advantages based solely on their ongoing oppression of all people of color. But many measures of well-being contradict this simplistic theory. Most recent numbers show white life expectancy declining, while Asian American people can expect to live a full 8 years longer, and Latino children will live on average 4 years longer than whites. Suicide in America claims twice as many lives as murder, and white people have the highest suicide rates, almost double those of black people. The largest number of crime victims, welfare recipients, drug deaths, and most other measures of misery are white. This doesn't mean black families don't suffer from intolerable race-based inequalities that must be overcome, but it's no solution to focus on purported white privilege that actually doesn't exist. I'm Michael Medved.
Special broadcast of the Michael Medved Show, Why They Fight, the story of the Arab-Israeli struggle. You can get a full tape of this broadcast or any of our other history broadcasts by calling Tree Farm Communications, 1-800-468-0464. What about the role of the United States? There is one huge misunderstanding here, which is that the U.S. has always been Israel's chief sponsor. It's simply not true. Through the 1950s, the U.S. limited the amount of arms it would send to Israel. Israel's main arms supplier throughout the 1950s was France, while the Arab states were getting some arms from the United States, and particularly from the Soviet Union. Everything changed between Israel and America into a much closer relationship, not because America started helping Israel make war but because of America's interest in making peace. Fascinating statistic. The aid to Israel averaged $122 million a year for some of the first 20 years of Israel's existence. More than the first 20 years of Israel's existence, the first 25 years of Israel's existence. When it changed was after the war in 1973, when President Carter started trying to make peace between Egypt and Israel. And when that peace agreement came through at Camp David in 1978, Israel gave up over 70% of the total territory it had been able to take in defensive war in 1967. It gave up its only source of oil, oil fields at Alma that provided half of Israel's needs. And to make up for all of that, the U.S. agreed to greatly increase the aid levels. In other words, if Israel would give back all of this land to Egypt to make peace, the U.S. promised to make up for part of that by jerking up the aid levels to $3 million a year. At the same time, we were providing $3 billion a year is what I should have said. At the same time, we were jerking up the aid levels to Egypt to $2.2 billion a year. All of this, it seems to me, is highly questionable at this point, but that is why the aid levels to Israel got so high. In 1967, during the Six-Day War, when Israel was threatened with its very life, President Johnson's State Department declared, "We are neutral in thought, word, and deed." And back in the 1950s, President Eisenhower was positively hostile to Israel, forcing Israel to retreat, to give back all of the land that it had won in the Suez Campaign. Many Middle Eastern wars, unfortunately. I know it's difficult to keep them all straight, but perhaps that will be the subject for further discussion. The important thing here is keeping in mind some of the myths and legends and distortions and separate them from the truths about the source of terrorism, the source of hostility, the source of hatred, the source of fighting. It's not based on yesterday. It's based on history that goes back a while, that it's important to understand for informed citizens of the world, and particularly of the greatest nation on God's green earth, upward and onward.
Have you heard about vine-to-bar chocolate? It's the winemaker's chocolate, the world's first chocolate made with well-vined Chardonnay marc from the beautiful coastal vineyards of North America. Gently pressed grapes are harvested after juicing, dried and finely milled, and carefully blended into the finest dark chocolate. The Chardonnay marc contains highly beneficial grape nutrients, flavanols, and has a natural sweetness that flavors the luscious dark chocolate. Mouthwatering, flavorful, delectable dark chocolate goodness with Chardonnay sweetness and beneficial nutrients, and its alcohol free too. It's Vine to Bar Chocolate. Order some today at vinetobar.com. That's VINETOBAR.com. Cold ship to your door. It's Vine to Bar. Vine to Bar Chocolate. Visit us at vinetobar.com.
Are you afraid to go to the mailbox because of letter after letter from the IRS? Are they stacking on more and more penalties and interest? By now, you know the problem won't go away on its own. Don't let the IRS chase you to your grave with penalties and interest and liens and levies. You need real help now. I'm Dan Pilla. I wrote the book on tax debt settlement, and I help thousands of people solve tax problems they thought couldn't be solved. I can help you too. Call 800-34-NO-TAX or go to my website, danpilla.com. That's danpilla.com. Danpilla.com.
G'day, I'm Jamel that works with Dr. Joel Wallach and the GCN team with Youngevity at teamg'day.com. By becoming an associate, you provide income for you and your family on your own hours while working from home. So contact me, Jamel, by filling in the contact box at teamg'day.com and I will get back to you personally and provide all the support you need to get started and build your Youngevity business. Teamg'day.com. Teamg'day.com.